that that gives rise to. But we'll talk about that more as we progress. So truth and paradox. We know what the paradox looks like, the central form of the liar paradox. We have sentences akin to sentence one on the board, which says sentence one is not true. So it says, in effect, of itself, that it isn't true. And the worry is, crudely, that if we think that that sentence is true, then it turns out not to be true, since it says of itself that it's not true. If it turns out to be false, then it ought to turn out to be true, and so forth. Okay, so as you've seen, we talked about this a bit. We can easily construct a kind of paradoxical derivation using very limited assumptions, right? So, in effect, assumptions about the disquotational properties of truth, the kinds of things that were exploited by the minimalist account of truth as sorts of platitudes governing concept of truth, together with fairly seemingly acceptable principles of classical logic. For example, bivalence and a denial that there can be true contradictions. Okay, denial of contradictions. So that all seems worrying. Seems worrying that this notion that at least seems to have certain kinds of uses for us, this notion of truth, right, uses in particular, again emphasised in the minimalist programme, this notion, when conjoined with seemingly correct principles of logic, leads into problems. And what I want to know is what we should do about that. Okay? And one thing we could do is just to drop the notion of truth. Okay, stop making use of it. It looked like it was useful, but it turns out on reflection that it's busted. It's no good as a concept. There's no point making use of it. In a way, as I think I said in the seminars, that's Tarski's response. Tarski thinks we should stop using the ordinary notion of truth. The ordinary notion of truth itself is responsible for the paradox and should be dropped. Rather than trying to figure out what false views we might have about the way that truth works that lead us into trouble, such that we can drop those false views and preserve the core notion of ordinary notion of truth in a hygienic form. That's right. Tarski's idea is that we should just get rid of truth entirely and replace it with a cleaned up notion, kind of formal notion of truth that's of use for purposes of science and is of use for purposes of logic and so forth. So let's begin by saying something about how Tarski's replacement notion is supposed to work. So what Tarski's going to do, or turns out replacement notions, he thinks there's no single viable notion of truth. So in place of our ordinary notion of truth, which leads into trouble, Tarski's going to offer us indefinitely many more specific notions. Okay, and once we have all of those specific notions, or you know, some subset of all those specific notions or something, then we'll be able to use those one way or another to do the work that we thought we needed our single uniform notion of truth to do, or at least all the work that was worth doing with our ordinary unreconstructed notion. So what Tarski's going to do is construct a kind of hierarchy of languages, each of which contains a proprietary notion of truth. Okay, so it works like this. We begin with a basic, where each except for the base one. Tarski's instruction begins with a basic language, which we can call L0, which doesn't contain any semantical concepts. So it doesn't contain, in particular, any concept akin to our is true. And it doesn't contain any concepts like reference or satisfaction that could be used to generate the notion of truth. In effect, doesn't contain anything useful for talking about its own sentences. It just contains ordinary base-level claims about things other than the language, so kinds of claims one makes about the external environment. Perhaps it contains the surprising, it's sunny today. And perhaps it contains other kinds of boring claims like snow is white, grass is green, and so forth. It has nothing containing a notion of truth. Obviously enough, the liar per se can't be constructed in that language. We can't construct a liar case because that would involve having a viable concept of truth that we can make use of to generate paradox. So that's the basic language. Next, we construct a slightly richer language, L1. And this contains a truth predicate array, is true 1, subscript 1 we can call it, but that truth predicate only applies to sentences of L0, the language we started with. Okay, so in L1, this new richer language, we can produce every instance of the T schema as it applies for sentences of our base language L0. So we have things like the sentence of L0 quotes S, it's sunny today or what have you, is true in this richer language, should be in L0 actually, if and only if, and then we translate the target sentence into our richer language. So in the target in L0 we had the sentence it's sunny today. That translates into L1 as something pronounced the same, it's sunny today. So we get the sentence of L0, it's sunny today is true in L0 if and only if the translation it's sunny today holds. Okay, so we just get that instance of the T schema. Okay. But we can't make use of this new truth predicate in application to anything other than sentences of our opening base language. So in particular, this truth predicate contained within L1 can't be used in application to sentences of L1. Okay, doesn't have any application there. Any attempt to apply it to sentences of L1 will deliver a falsehood. Okay, so at this stage we have a basic, what we call an object language, the object of our study and the object that we talk about in our slightly richer language, have a basic object language, L0, together with a first meta language, a language for talking about the object language. I'm going to say, just as metaphysics is a theory about physics, isn't a meta-language is a language used to talk about some other language. Okay, so here you have an object language, the object of your inquiry and description, and then a meta-language used to talk about that object language. Okay, so we know that L0 contains no truth predicate, so the liar can't be generated there, and said that the meta-language, L1, contains a truth predicate, all right, so it's kind of at risk, but that truth predicate only applies to sentences of L0, not to sentences of L1. So again, the liar can't be produced in L1, because to produce a liar case, one would need an application of the truth predicate to something involving the truth predicate. You can't do that. It's ruled out by the formal system. I'm not going to go through every level of the hierarchy, but let's go through one more. Now we move up a level, providing a truth predicate for sentences of our initial meta language in a meta-meta language, language for talking about the intervening meta language, language L2. This has a truth predicate, but its truth predicate only applies to L1 and L0, or just L1, and doesn't apply to anything in L2 itself. So again, one can't generate the liar paradox there. Hello. Okay, so what we've got here is resources to ascribe particular truth predicates to sentences of each language in this hierarchy, but only by ascending to the next language up in the hierarchy. There are going to be indefinitely many of these languages. You have to start with the object language, first meta-language, meta-meta-language, meta-meta-meta-language, and so forth up the hierarchy. Each language other than the base language L0 contains a truth predicate, but that truth predicate only applies to languages further down the hierarchy. And since no language in the hierarchy contains its own truth predicate, the liar paradox can't be generated at any point. So, in this system, Tarski seeks to provide a definition of truth able to deliver something like this restricted version of the T schema. So instead of having a sentence S is true if and only if S, we have a sentence of LN, some language in the hierarchy, at level N in the hierarchy, sentence of LN S is true, N plus 1, using the truth predicate from the language above N in the hierarchy, if and only if, and then we state a translation of the target sentence into the appropriate level of the hierarchy. So let's just see in a little bit more detail how this deals with specific cases of the liar. So consider the version we considered earlier. In order to take into account the Tarskian hierarchy, we have to provide, in effect, suitable subscripts for the truth predicates involved in setting up the argument. We have to select the appropriate kind of truth predicate to be used in application to target sentences in order to try and set up the basis for the liar paradox. And then there are really two options to be considered. One where subscripting in the target liar sentences is uniform, and one where it's not uniform. Okay, so see how that goes. Consider taking the uniform route. So there we have our target sentences. Sentence one is not true, N. Okay, so we use this particular truth predicate for N. And then we get things like P1, sentence one is not true, N, is true, N, uniform subscript, same truth predicate, if and only if sentence one is not true, N. That's potentially paradox friendly, would lead to some kinds of contradiction if it were acceptable. But here, P1 isn't a proper instance of the relevant form of the T schema. Okay? Because true N can't be used in application to any sentence itself involving true N. That's ruled out by the nature of the hierarchy. The rule governing this notion true N means that it can't be truly applied to any sentence involving true N. So the left-hand side here, sentence one is not true, N is true N, comes out false because its true N doesn't truly apply to itself. The right-hand side can nonetheless come out true, so P1 itself, being a biconditional with a falsehood on one side and a truth on the other, itself comes out false. And that's the end of the worry about paradox in that case. So one way of attempting to generate a paradox in this system fails when we make use of the same kind of truth predicate in two occasions. The alternative approach would be to take a non-uniform route and adhere to the restrictions on application of the relevant kinds of truth predicates, right? So in application to a sentence involving true N, make use of the concept true N plus 1 or higher. So in this route, we get sentence 1 is not true N, and then first premise generating the paradox is sentence 1 is not true N is true N plus 1, if and only if sentence 1 is not true N, okay? That premise P1 is a proper instance of the restricted T schema. And so it's true N plus 2. It ought to be accepted by someone speaking the N plus 2 language. So we can therefore derive an analogue of the sceptical conclusion. Yet sentence 1 is true N plus 1, and sentence 1 is not true N. But as ought to be plain, this conclusion isn't contradictory, and so isn't an instance of anything paradoxical. This says that this sentence has one property, true n plus 1, and lacks some distinct property, true n. And there's no problem with that. There's no problem with any individual thing having and lacking distinct properties without further argument. So on this non-uniform use of the truth predicates, again, though you can get further in generating an analogue of the paradox, the outcome isn't itself paradoxical. Right? It's just a straightforward claim about something having and lacking distinct properties. So, Tarski's hierarchical account does one or the other of the following with respect to the target paradox. Either it makes an essential element of the lie deduction false, because that essential element included an attempt to apply a single truth predicate to a sentence involving that very truth predicate, or it gets further than that, but it ultimately removes any inconsistency or contradiction. So there's nothing paradoxical in the outcome. And now what's doing the work here, in effect, is a rejection through endorsing this hierarchical approach to truth, a rejection of what Tarski calls universality. If you remember from last time, this was one of the properties of English that Tarski thought gave rise to the paradox, right? The fact that anything that can be said within the all-encompassing semantical power of English. In particular, English can be used to talk about itself and to say about bits of itself that those sentences are true or false. So what's doing the work here is rejection of that idea of universality. Instead of having something like Tarski thinks English is like, a universal instrument capable of capturing all claims one might want to make, we get something much more restricted, right? An array, a hierarchy of much more restricted instruments, right? And the idea is that roughly, if we have all of the elements of the hierarchy, or lots of the elements of the hierarchy, we can do all or most of the work we wanted a universal instrument like English to be able to do, but without the risk attending possession of such a universal instrument that its employment will lead us into paradox. So if we're prepared to give up the idea, in particular, that there's a single universally applicable truth predicate, then we can avoid the liar in the way that Tarski proposes. Okay, so to stress, this is a replacement. The idea here is this is a replacement for our ordinary, unreconstructed notion of truth. According to Tarski, that ordinary notion is really unusable, certainly unusable for purposes of science or logic. So Tarski's idea minimally seems to provide a neat formal method for dealing with something like truth predicates while avoiding the liar. But many theorists find incredible the idea that no consistent or coherent language can do what Tarski thinks English tries to do, which is to contain its own truth predicate. So the idea here is that what Tarski is really offering us is a kind of counsel of despair. We had the presentation of a kind of paradox, or seeming paradox, arising within English, and one natural hope at that stage would be that it's just an appearance, right? It's just an illusory appearance that English itself is broken to the extent that it gives rise to this kind of paradox. So many theorists would hope that there's a way of cleaning up, discerning in the mess of ordinary use of the concept of truth, some clean, usable core that really is the core of, say, English, the English truth predicate, or is the core the German truth predicate, or truth more generally, concept of truth. What Tarski's suggesting is that there's no such thing to be had. We need to move to some formal replacement and take the various losses attendant on that move on the chin. right? There are going to be things we can no longer do that we thought we could do by using English, and thought might even be safe things to do. We're not going to be able to do those things anymore, but we have to accept that kind of loss. But many theorists hope for more. They hope for something, let's put it this way, they hope for either a cleaned up version of the ordinary notion of truth, okay, one that avoids the paradox, one that we can see to avoid the paradox, or a replacement notion insofar as this idea is different, but that's better able to do more of the work that we want the ordinary concept of truth to do. It's less restrictive than Tarski's proposal. Okay, so some problems with, just briefly, some problems with this hierarchical solution that Tarski proposes. One kind of issue here is that it seems obvious and undeniable that English must contain its own truth predicate. Right? Is a true sentence of English. Okay, it must be that English has this expression and is able to use it across the board. If we treat Tarski's proposal as an account of anything like the way that truth works in English, then we're forced to deny that. We're forced to give up the idea that English as a whole has its own truth predicate that applies to all and only the true sentences of English. Instead, we'd have to move to the idea, for example, that there's no such thing as English. Rather, there's something like English zero, which is like English, but with all uses of is true expunged, and then English one, which has English zero and applications of is true to that, and so forth. Right? So there are multiple idiolects of English as opposed to a single all-encompassing language. But it seems undeniable to at least some theorists that English is a uniform system and moreover contains its own truth predicate. In particular, the predicate is a true sentence of English. Okay. Because if this isn't a truth predicate, that has to be for one or the other of two reasons. Right? First, it might be because there's some true sentence of English that the predicate fails to apply to. Right? So there's something that you can say in English that's in fact true, it's just that I can't say it in the way I just did by making use of English. Okay? That predicate fails to apply to the sentence. Or the predicate applies to something, so it's true of something that isn't a true sentence of English, right? No, perhaps it's a true sentence of German. Okay, so you say something true in German, I say that's a true sentence of English, and thereby manage to say something true, which again looks problematic. So neither of those alternatives looks especially acceptable, so it looks as though it remains plausible that English contains its own truth predicate. But then it seems that the only other option in response to the paradox would be to deny bivalence, the principle that every sentence is either true or not true. But rejection of bivalence appears to entail that there's a sentence of English that's not true and also not true. And that also seems to many people to be unacceptable. Looks contradictory to at least some people. Need careful handling to see why it's not. We'll come back a little bit later to a suggestion made last time, so that there might be a way of dealing with this by exploiting the idea that in order for truth to be applicable to a sentence, it really has to be because the sentence expresses a proposition. The proposition is the fundamental bearer of truth. In that case, there might be ways of making these relevant denials without that leading into the acceptance of anything straightforwardly contradictory. But we'll come back to that. So, if one wanted to apply Tarski's account to a natural language, some analogue of Tarski's account to a natural language, the most natural view here would be to appeal to some kind of hidden ambiguity, something similar. Okay, so is a true sentence of English looks like a single notion that we apply uniformly to target sentences of English, it would have to turn out, if we tried to reconstruct English in line with Tarski's formal construction, it would have to turn out that really there were indefinitely many things one could say with something like this form of words, right? So we'd always say, make the same noise, is a true sentence of English, but sometimes we'd be saying, is a true one sentence of English one, sometimes is true n for English n, and so forth. Always in application to these subtly different versions of English. Okay, so there's something puzzling and problematic about the idea that we might exploit Tarski's account as an account of anything close to English. And the problems here are more generally of the following two forms. It's emphasised by Scott Soames, but generally well known in the literature. First, there appear to be things we can say, or that we'd like to be able to say, that are incompatible with the hierarchy. Okay. In particular, there seem to be things that don't look paradoxical and perhaps aren't per se paradoxical, that get thrown out along with throwing out things that lead straight into the paradox. There's a kind of worry that we're throwing, speak the baby out with the bathwater here. Right? Where Tarski's hierarchical approach is a kind of overkill. Although it does adequately rule out the liar paradox, it also stops us from being able to say a bunch of okay stuff that we'd hope to be able to say. Way of thinking about that is that the hierarchy fails to do, gives us a range of truth predicates, the conjunction of which fails to do enough of what we wanted the truth predicate in English to do. So this replacement isn't optimal, or at least we'd hope for something that better fit the kinds of things we ordinarily take ourselves to be able to do by use of the truth predicate. And connectedly, the hierarchical approach appears to fit quite badly with the way we ordinarily use natural languages. The way in which first objection is a slightly more general and in some ways more powerful objection, because it applies even if we take seriously the idea that what Tarski is seeking to offer us is a replacement for an ordinary notion of truth. Second objection fits that model too, but is better seen as an objection to the idea that we don't take Tarski so seriously when he seems to present us with a replacement for the ordinary concept of truth. Rather, we try and take Tarski's construction as a purported account of how talk about truth in fact works in, say, English or some other natural language. So at least an approximation to that attempts to target a cleaned up version of the ordinary notion of truth. So what kinds of more specific problems do these generic worries target? Well, one kind of issue here is this. In explaining the hierarchical approach, we appear to exploit the idea that each subscripted predicate shares a feature with all the others, but varies in line with the subscript, right? Otherwise, there'd be a kind of cheating involved in presenting the account in the way we do, by appealing, in effect, to the uniform bit of each element, true, plus something that varies, right? Some number corresponding to the relevant bit of the language. If we didn't do that, then we just give, you know, we might as well use letters or something in place of all the various predicates. The worry there would be that we'd be failing to capture some commonality across all these cases. It's a clear similarity across all the particular T schemas applying to particular languages that we'd fail to capture if we labelled them is A, is B, is C, and so forth through all the elements in the hierarchy. But look, on this kind of view, the way that we understand these various truth predicates at least suggests that we might reasonably quantify over the subscriptive position. I might try saying, for example, there's at least one such subscriptive predicate that applies to some target sentence. Right, so there's some n such that is true n applies to this sentence or the like. Looks like a very natural thing to think one can say, right, in attempting to characterise the hierarchy. But that can't be right. That way of talking is incompatible with the strictness of the hierarchy. Otherwise, we'd be able to use it in order to make the kinds of general analogues of the kinds of very general truth claims that the hierarchy is designed to avoid, to prevent us making. Because if we could make use of such general claims, it's very plausible that we could more or less immediately reinstate versions of the paradox. So just taking a particular example, I won't work through the example, but suppose you're allowed to quantify in this kind of way. You can construct claims following form. Say, for all levels X in the hierarchy, for all languages in the hierarchy, sentence 1 is false at level X in the hierarchy. Okay? It says sentence is always false. It looks as though that kind of construction is going to be paradox apt. It's going to be the kind of thing that will lead into the possibility of reconstituting the liar. So taking seriously the hierarchy means treating each of the predicates that we've given as true in 0, true in 1, and so forth, true in n, treating each of those as primitive and not kinds of relations to a point in the hierarchy. They're just specific expressions that happen to share some formal similarity, right? They're pronounced in part in the same way, but that's the only common element. Second sort of problem, problem about lack of fit between the sorts of things we want to be able to do and take ourselves to be able to do in English and the hierarchy, arises from the requirement that in order to understand a predication of truth, and indeed in order to make appropriate predications of truth, predications exploiting the right truth predicate, one needs to know relevant levels in the hierarchy of the things we're trying to apply the truth predicate to. Right, so in order to know whether or not this particular truth predicate can be applied to this particular sentence, we need to know exactly where the sentence falls in the hierarchy. So forth. Now that's fine in cases in which we're working with formal languages and where the target sentences are made fully explicit. So cases that Tarski was interested in. So this isn't a problem with Tarski's construction, it's a problem with its fit with what we get up to when we make use of notions of truth in ordinary language. Okay? So this works fine whenever one knows exactly what one's applying truth to, right? So I can look at it, see what truth predicates it involves, and use that information to figure out which truth predicate one can apply in that case. Now, there are these kinds of very natural claims where this doesn't work. So suppose I utter something like, one, every sentence Tom uttered in the metaphysics lecture is true. Kind of thing I'd say. Here we have no way, here I have no way of knowing the specific level of Tom's utterances. Whether, for example, they attributed truth to any sentence, whether they attributed truth to sentences that already involve a notion of truth, and so forth. Now, it really depends a bit what the subject matter was. Right? If he's talking about Aristotle on truth, it might push me further up the hierarchy than I might otherwise have to go. So, I have no way of knowing which particular truth predicate I ought to be exploiting here. So, one problem is for me in selecting the right truth predicate to make the claim I want to make. Another problem is for you in understanding and assessing the claim I've made, right? Because if you know that Tom uttered some sentence involving a notion of truth, then minimally you know that I have to have used truth predicate at the level above. So if you can see that I haven't done that, you can immediately see that what I've said is false, whatever Tom said. Right? If not, then you actually have to do more work. You have to reflect on what Tom exactly said and see whether it comes out relevantly true. So there's a kind of difficulty here in figuring out which truth predicate to use and in assessing claims made using truth predicates. Now perhaps, and this is sometimes suggested, perhaps there's a way of dealing with this by appeal to some form of indexicality. So the idea here is that is true is on its own or is somehow connected with a kind of indexical expression, occasion-sensitive expression, that varies its reference from use to use. Right, so rather than thinking in terms of true in N, we might have true in I, where I works a bit like that language or something, right? True in that language. And then we use the that language bit to select, from occasion to occasion, the right level in the hierarchy, say. But we need evidence for thinking that's how true works, right? Otherwise it'd just be a kind of ad hoc proposal, okay, to avoid the difficulty we've got to at this point. And moreover, we'd need some kind of non-magical account of the mechanism that enabled this kind of demonstrative to always get the right level in the hierarchy, okay? Always manage to select which truth predicates required on this particular occasion. So again, right, there's a way in which formally there might be ways of turning this kind of trick, providing an account that works like this and will do the required job. But what's then wanted is some evidence that we should buy that kind of theory. Right? If I just say, oh yeah, this expression in my theory, is magical, it always selects precisely the right point in the hierarchy for applications of truth of the kind in question, be right to worry that I haven't really solved anything other than, you know, some formal difficulty. And moreover, there appear to be cases that such that no assignment of level in the hierarchy is appropriate. So these are the kinds of cases usually attributed to Saul Kripke, but I'm not entirely convinced Kripke originated them. But anyway, usually attributed to Saul Kripke in his important paper, Outline of the Theory of Truth, provides a following kind of example of this, cases where it looks like there's no workable, viable assignment of level. You have two individuals, Nixon and Dean. Dean says, one, no Watergate sentence uttered by Nixon is true. And Nixon says, two, no Watergate sentence uttered by Dean is true. Okay. Given the quantifications involved, it ought to be that each of these claims applies to the other. Says something about its truth or falsity. Okay, so we suppose that one's uttered by Dean and two's uttered by Nixon, and moreover, suppose that everything else they've said isn't true at some appropriate level in the hierarchy. That can be taken for granted. Then, as with the Tarskian solution to the liar, there appear to be two kinds of options for subscripting the truth predicate that each of these individuals makes use of, by targeting which particular kind of truth predicate each makes use of. Either we give them the same truth subscript, we have them making use of the very same truth predicate, the same level in the hierarchy, or we place one of their truth predicates at a slightly higher level in the hierarchy. So suppose we give them the same subscript, then in that case, neither of their claims can be used to assess the other's utterance. Okay? Neither of their truth predicates will apply to the other because the truth predicates are at the same level and the hierarchy rules out that kind of application of a truth predicate. Okay. In that case, both of their claims could conceivably be true despite their seeming to be denying the truth of one another's claims. Okay. And that seems to be, according to Kripke at least, incompatible with our ordinary understanding of what's going on in these claims. Right, our ordinary understanding is one on which they can't both be right here. If one of them's right, the other must be wrong, right, and vice versa. So suppose we give Dean's utterance a higher subscript than Nixon's. So we go for a non-uniform vocation. So we think that one of them uses a truth predicate that can apply to the other's truth predicate. Now, Nixon's utterance doesn't assess this particular utterance of Dean's because it's too low down in the hierarchy. Nixon's truth predicate can't apply to Dean's. So, yeah, there'll be different ways of going here. So the thought here is that in that case, Nixon's utterance can be true because it doesn't make a relevant claim about Dean's utterance. We might think it would be false instead because of the inapplicability of that particular truth predicate at the appropriate level. One way or another, there'll be a difference in this case in the capacity of the different truth predicates being used to assess the other person's truth predicate. So Dean's utterance will assess Nixon's utterance. So Dean's utterance on the relevant reading can come out false. Okay. But one way or another, what we get here is a lack of symmetry. So we get a case where we have a truth predicate at one level that applies to a lower level truth predicate, but the lower level truth predicate doesn't apply to the higher level truth predicate. So we get differential assessment in these cases, even though what the two individuals seem to say is the very same thing. They seem to make the very same kind of claim. So the kind of worry here is in part that it's intuitive that these cases are symmetrical. Either, you know, neither of the assessments works or both does. The alternative way of thinking about this, harking back to the kinds of things we talked about briefly in application to Cartwright, is that there's something arbitrary about going in either direction here. If we think that Dean's utterance is at the higher level, that looks arbitrary. If we think that Nixon's is at higher level, that looks arbitrary. Parity considerations then kick in to say we should give a uniform treatment, but that fails again to fit our intuitive understanding of what's going on in this kind of case. So the hierarchical approach faces fairly severe difficulties in accounting for anything that close to our ordinary understanding of truth. It may have a function for more formal purposes, but if our aim is to approximate as closely as possible to our ordinary understanding of truth, consistently with avoiding paradoxes, we might well want to look elsewhere for a resolution of the liar. Right, so this kind of issue has induced, some theorists to reconsider the standing of rejection of bivalence, or at least, for reasons mentioned, the role of propositions in bivalence, the way that the principle of bivalence is taken to apply to liar sentences, or not to apply. So, one way of understanding this kind of approach is that it involves revising our understanding of the logic that's applicable to sentences of English. Okay, so one way of understanding this idea is as imposing a kind of restriction on classical logic. Classical logic includes the principle of bivalence that every sentence is either true or false. Okay? So one way of understanding what's going on here is as saying we need to give up that principle. Right? That's just the principle of unsophisticated classical logic. We need to move to a kind of logic that doesn't accept every component of classical logic. Or we might have other reasons for wanting to do that. And that appears to have been Tarski's take on this kind of approach. Okay, so we saw in his characterisation of what we should think about the liar, amongst the major options here was giving up what he called ordinary, which we'd call classical logic. Okay, give up classical logic in favour of some other logical system might provide you with a way of avoiding the paradox. One central problem for this approach is the following. The most natural, the most straightforward way of pursuing the approach is by appeal to something like an additional truth value. Okay, so have an additional truth value intermediate between the values true and false. So have a third truth value and make use of that in your logic and revise. That enables you a bit more flexibility in how you apply analogues of bits of classical logic. But if we do that, if what we want to say about things like the ordinary liar sentence is, well, it's not true and it's not false, but that's because it has this intervening value, right, the third special value, in that case it appears to be possible to reinstate versions of the liar by appeal to something like one. Sentence one is not true. Right? Since sentence one is lacks the value true, it's not true. Okay, even though it has this other value, still it's not true. And then on that basis, unless one does lots of other revising to other elements in the puzzle, you can reinstate versions of the paradox. Now, we might try ascribing our special third value to our target sentence and denying that this makes it fail to be true. Or we might try and say that having the third value isn't a way of not being true, it's not a way of being true. But now, again, it looks like we can reinstate versions of the paradox with things like this. Sentence 2 says that sentence 2 has a value other than truth or falsehood, or is false. Okay? If 2 has some other value, it appears to be true. Okay? Because it says in itself that it has this other value. Right? Surely that would be enough to make it true. And so it lacks the third value. So by the second conjunct, so it's false. By the second conjunct, it seems to be true. Okay, since false, and so forth. So it seems to be possible, with a bit of ingenuity, to exploit certain attempts to revise classical logic in the face of paradox in order to reinstate the paradox. So this kind of issue is a version of a so-called strengthened liar, right? So the liar strengthened to deal with initial attempts to fix up the logic by appeal to things like additional truth values and the like, truth value gaps. Now the idea, as I've said a couple of times, as Tommy mentioned, this idea could be pursued instead by appeal to some version of the idea that some sentences can be truth value gaps, not because they have some third value, right? Not because, I mean, not that they lack the normal truth values, or truth value gaps in that sense. They're not true, they're not false, because they have a third value, but rather because they entirely lack a truth value. Not some third value, but no value at all in the perspective of assessments as to truth. So the idea here is going to be, one way of pursuing this idea would be to say that the only things that really have truth values are propositions, or more minimally, the only things that really have truth values are sentences that express propositions. And then the idea will be that liar sentences, for some reason, fail to express propositions, so aren't suitable targets for assessment as true or false. After the break, I'm going to say a little bit more about that proposal. I think it's worth pursuing, but there are some issues that one needs to deal with in order to properly assess it. But we'll come back to that and then hopefully move on to sororities as well after the break. So if we can come back at 5 past, that would be fabulous. Thank you.